Hello and welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, and I'm joined by Matt Williamson. Matt, how's it going tonight?
It is going fantastic. I am very excited to have our first guest on.
Yeah, Matt, why don't you just go ahead and introduce him?
Yeah, we got one of my buds on, Sigmund Bloom. I'm sure all of you have heard of him. He's on Football Guys and hosts his own podcast on the couch. I've probably been on that 7 or 8 times at least, often with our boy Lance Zierlein, and Football Guys, does Audible, he does everything. I mean, he's easy to find. Great to be here, man. What are you up to?
Off season, and really, this is fun because this is the time of year, and it's so wonderful. But let me say first and foremost, I'm honored to be here. Very honored to occupy this spot with two esteemed gentlemen like Matt and Ryan. People I've learned a lot from over the years, and both I will say, and I'm not making this up, both have thoroughly, is it okay if I say ass?
Go for it.
Kick my ass, both of them, thoroughly, in leagues that we've been in together, in dynasty. So I'm here to tell you that you've arrived in the right spot. But the cool thing about this is, I mean, if you like dynasty fantasy football, then you just like football. You make it your business to know everything you can about football, and that's why we love the turning of the page to the off season, because we've got franchise tag free agent moves, the draft, then you start getting into OTAs and you start to get a little bit of an idea of what these new coaches are going to do, or changes that are coming. And that's what Dynasty Fantasy Football is all about, is trying to stay on top of these things. And I think that this moment in the calendar is a really great moment to be focusing on Dynasty Fantasy Football, because there's always this gap between like what people think about what happened with a player last year that just ended, but in reality, if you look at it closer, there's more nuance to the narrative that we have coming out of the season, and it's a time you can take advantage of that with trades in your leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Sig, like Matt said, we're glad to have you on, glad to have you as our first guest. And I don't know if you remember this, but, excuse me, I've been doing the DLF thing for a few years now and have been at doing a little bit at Roto World, but it was actually Sig who gave me my first chance at writing an article in the fantasy community back in the Draft Guys days.
Oh, yeah.
Sig, you remember that?
Yeah, Draft Guys was really fun. That was a little more of like the Wild West frontier. And it's great. And just as a quick aside, I mean, it's, this community has, and to be part of it as it has become so robust and so full of incredible people, it is really something that I'll cherish when I look back on my life, because it was something that we built ourselves. And everybody is reaching, like all of us had somebody reaching down, and football is just like this with relationships. There's always somebody reaching down from the next level up to help you up, and everybody just keeps passing that on, and it creates a community of goodwill. And I think with all of our listeners and our audience, it's the same idea. And aside from football and winning leagues and being one step ahead of the curve and things like that, I think us all being in each other's lives has been a really valuable and will continue to be a really valuable thing. So again, I want to echo that on this opportunity to be part of a very auspicious beginning for something that I know will be around for a long time.
Sig, speaking of which,
and
this is our fourth Dynasty Blueprint with Ryan and I, and Ryan hasn't been on the air nearly as much as you or I over his life, and he's kind of a little bit more structured, and he writes an agenda, and he thinks read it. Just like Pod Vader and Daniel Dopp used to do, I would, they'd at least email it to me and I'd pretend to read it. But I'm going to hijack you for a minute, because those that don't know, Bloom and I have a little thing going here, man. I mean, we're both Western PA Steelers Yinzers, and I need to talk Steelers Stullers with you a little bit before we get into anything here. I need an overview of what you expect from the offseason. And I apologize, Ryan, but I have to go off script, and him and I need to talk black and gold.
Sure.
I mean, it just has to happen.
This is important. Like, I need to open up a beer right now.
Yeah, and I.
Yeah. So, okay. Everybody knows that I was massively excited for the Steelers offense going into this season. You could see it coming. And Todd Haley is a facilitator. I try to beat this drum as much as I can, because I didn't like the hire. I thought maybe even wreaked a little bit of nepotism when they hired him, because it seemed like giving him the interview was just doing him a favor, because his name seemed like it was Mud at the moment. And when they hired him, I thought, But in hindsight, you see what Todd Haley does is he kind of gets out of the way. He sees what works in what he has and allows it to bubble up to the top and to flourish, whether it's a running game like with Thomas Jones and Jamaal Charles, or now we can see this passing game of a just barnstorming, you know, gopher broke pass offense. It's what Ben Roethlisberger – Matt, would you agree that like this is what Ben Roethlisberger has been dreaming about for his whole career, getting to play point guard basically?
Absolutely, but I also think that Arians is gone for a reason in that Ben used to be getting his butt kicked. I mean, a two-minute seven-step drops. I think the Rooneys looked at it and said, our premium asset is taking too much of a beating. We got to get the ball out of his hands a little bit, and Haley doesn't get enough credit for really doing a good job.
Yeah, Mike Munchak to an offensive lineup. Well, that's the thing. So anyway, the Steelers 2015 to me was like like a Russian novel, like Dostoevsky or Tolstoy or something, like just depressing, like one after another week, like every couple of weeks, just, oh my God, you know, first it's Bryant gets suspended, you know, and then you have Le'Veon Bell getting suspended. You have then, you know, Roethlisberger gets hurt, and then eventually you have Le'Veon Bell gets hurt, but then D'Angelo Williams is great, and D'Angelo Williams gets hurt, and you never really got to see this. Like Kelvin Beachum hurt. Oh, Marquise Pouncey before the season even starts.
Josh Scobie.
Yeah, well, you're on your fourth kicker, right? They're on their fourth kicker going into the season. So I think we never – Matt, how many games? Was it like one half of one game that Bryant, Brown, and Bell were on the field together with Roethlisberger?
Yeah.
One half of one game did we see Roethlisberger, Bell, Brown, and Bryant. I mean, I don't check the math on that, but I'm pretty sure that's how it went down.
Yeah.
We haven't even seen close to what this offense can be. You know, as hey, Denver Broncos, you know, thumbs up, cheers, defense wins championships. Wade Phillips, I love seeing that guy get the spotlight. The Steelers with one more piece of their offense would have beaten the Broncos in Denver.
No doubt.
So then stepping back, we are on the Dynasty Blueprint. For Dynasty Fantasy Football, and I think people are pricing this in for Martavis Bryant, maybe for Roethlisberger, I'm not as sure, even someone like Marcus Wheaton. And when we get to guys to buy low on right now, someone like Sammy Coates, you know, this offense could set the bar for fantasy production. You know, when we think about like how big the pie is going to be, that's a good start for figuring out who's going to have the biggest slices. The Steelers offense, I think these guys can just stay healthy for half the season together. Will really wow people with the production they can put up.
I absolutely agree, and I'm not going to harp on this too much. I haven't talked about it on any forum yet, but I'm looking at the Steeler offseason, and I'm hoping that they can fill holes, you know, bring back some Ramon Fosters and Gay and those type of guys that are, you know, bottom, middle-of-the-road type free agents, and I hope they set themselves up on draft day that they can use a premium pick on one or maybe even two on one of these outstanding defensive linemen that are going to be in this class. I mean, it's so deep with defensive tackles, edge rushers, that if they can add, like we saw with Denver, you can never have too many of them. And this draft sets up that I hope that they can add two or at least one very talented big body on defense.
So, and sorry, Ryan, you're being so patient.
I'll come back
on, and you can have someone on, Ryan, that will want to talk Kentucky basketball, and I'll just sit quietly. That's another thing that happened that made me really excited this year, and I really think that this, thinking about how the Steelers could have performed with just a little more luck in the health department, is you did have a covered as bear kind of moment for the defense, and the Steelers defense used to define how Steelers football went down. And this year I think you saw, well, Ryan Shazier stayed healthy. You saw him making more of those types of plays. Bud Dupree and Darvis Jones even got in on the action and made some big plays that turned games. And look, Antoine Blake is not a good cover corner, but he made some momentum plays. They lost Senquez Golson before the season even started. Mike Mitchell was obviously now in hindsight playing 2014 hurt because we saw a different player in 2015. Another tone setter. So I look at the Steelers defense and what started to happen. James Harrison, like ringing out that last little bit of football, like continuing to be a link back to what this team used to be. So you saw a little more attitude. And the defense still has holes and can be exploited by any sort of sound offense, but that trend is also turning. I think you're going to see, as this as offseason goes on, the Steelers are going to be one of the Super Bowl favorites going into the season. Now, just bloom them. It's February 11th.
Man.
I've already bloomed them. No, but really, really, I think you look at this team and you look at the way the Arizona are pointing, and they're kind of, would you agree they're kind of out of cap hell? Maybe they're in cap purgatory. They're not there yet, Matt, but the last couple of years, their hands have been tied because I'm thinking like Dwayne Allen. Ooh.
Yeah,
someone like right. that, you know? Somebody that you could fit in this offense and see what you could do with a little bit of flexibility in the free agent market.
Yeah, and we'll get away from this topic after after this. But, yes, I do think they're out of cap hell. They have a lot of free agents, though, so they need to fill the roster. But they don't have anyone that if he leaves, oh, no, what's going to happen?
Excellent.
So definitely no need to apologize, guys. This, you know, like Bloom said, this is if you're a dynasty player, you love football. That, you know, that was what you said, I think. And mm-hmm. and this is great information coming from two big Steelers fans and followers. So just to dig into the dynasty, I guess connotation of some of that, you know, Brown, Bryant, Bell, those guys are all top 20 startup picks. We know what they are. You know, there's some injury concern there, maybe with Bell. There's off-field stuff possibly with Bryant, but they're still top 20 overall guys in dynasty. So Bloom, let me ask you this: if you're taking a shot, you know, end of your dynasty roster on one of these guys, Wheaton, Coates, or Jesse James, the rookie tight end.
Right.
Who are you taking there, and give us some thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's Coates. Well, I mean, let me look at the – of course, this is a chance for me to say Dynasty League football mock draft. I'm in right now.
Nice.
I also did one with Roto World that just wound up a 20-rounder. And, yeah, so in this one, Wheaton went just in the same round as Coates. So at that – Wheaton and Coates, so with Wheaton, you won't have to wait as long. I mean, he's closer to the player he's going to be. And he did finally get on the same page with Roethlisberger. Obviously, that game with Seattle was a big watershed moment for him, I think, in his career. But Sammy Coates, I think, showed out, considering where he's supposed to be in his development, showed out just fine when he finally got on the field. And he has a higher ceiling as a player than Wheaton. And I think that he, at this point, I haven't heard anything, and Matt, you can correct me if you have, I haven't heard anything to make me think that come next year, if Wheaton and Coates continue on their paths, Wheaton, and we see this year, like the free agent market is going to be, guys are getting paid, wide receivers that hit the market are getting paid, you know, Marcus Wheaton, yeah, and Marcus Wheaton's going to get paid. I mean, I think the Steelers aren't going to pay Marcus Wheaton what the market will pay him. So there's Sammy Coates coming on, and maybe Marcus Wheaton gets a chance to start somewhere else. Maybe it's even a good offense with a good quarterback, but I see Sammy Coates coming on as the number three in this offense, and then you mentioned it, Ryan, with Martavis Bryant. I hate to say this, bring the specter into the room, but yeah, I mean, he's a slip-up away, and you can still see with Bryant, too, and Matt, you can comment on this, that maybe doesn't totally have the confidence of the coaches. And they're not putting him in there as a guy. Now, granted, again, when he had to fill in for Brown in Denver, he really showed what he's capable of and gave you that glimpse of the future. But at the same time, we can't totally turn our back on that. So I look at Sammy Coates as a player with a higher ceiling, even though next year he might not have any value, where Wheaton could be a flex in a pinch or a wide receiver three, or if somebody goes down in front of him, maybe even more.
Yeah, you mentioned it. I mean, at this time next year, Wheaton's going to be a free agent. And my hunch is he'll probably not return. I was down at minicamp. I saw Coates live. He was pretty impressive, you know, and he's still learning, obviously. I think he's very physically impressive. And like you kind of mentioned, I mean, Martavis Bryant's a bong hit away from, you know, I mean, being out of the league, or, you know, gone for a year. And then these three are playing all the time. I think I'd rather have Coates than Wheaton, just because I'm thinking about 2017.
Yeah, the Coates, I don't know. It seems like the expectations were out of whack from the beginning with the report that, you know, they drafted him to take Bryant's spot those first four games. And, I mean, that was, I don't know, that just seems so manufactured and just, I don't know, fake, I guess. Coates, like you know, the majority of rookies wasn't ready. He had a big game or a couple big games there at the end, and I would agree with you guys. I think I'd rather have Coates long term over Wheaton. Well, let's get back on track. I expect you guys to closely follow your agendas from now on. So in the past few days, LeSean McCoy has been in the news again, not for the best of reasons. He, as most of our listeners probably know, was involved in this incident with some off-duty police, an assault of those police officers. And, the news is still coming out on this, but it looks like he's probably going to end up arrested from this incident. And who knows what happens from there, a suspension potentially. I don't think he'll be cut by Buffalo, but you never know. After his first season in Buffalo, his dynasty value seemed to be on the decline already. Carlos Williams, the rookie, at times outplayed him, and that gap, I would think, with this incident is only going to narrow. Sig, what do you think of McCoy? Share your thinking there.
Sure. There were a few people in the redraft perspective lower on McCoy than I was going into the season. Expectations can be everything for your perceptions. And he was hurt going into the year with that hamstring. And I think that we can say conclusively that what we saw from him early on was a compromised McCoy. And actually, with everything that was going on with that offense, Tyrod Taylor banged up and not the biggest passing threat, I thought in the second half of the year, he played better than I expected, and I saw more than I thought I would see from him, because in Philadelphia in 2014, he was affirmatively mediocre to sometimes even poor. You just forget who he is and just watch him play, and it wasn't good. So I think that he had a lot more desire, a lot more just finishing his runs, not capitulating, not trying to bounce things outside. I was worried that he was a player in decline in 2014 because he looked like a player who thought he was capable of more than he really was capable at that point, and he started early. I'm sure Matt can talk at length about this. This is a guy that the clock started ticking early for him because he came into the league young and started producing young. So in my mind, he rehabilitated where he's at this point in his career. Like you said, though, Carlos Williams was a badass. I mean, right out of the gate, this is a guy that you took notice of because he was big. For how big he was agile, and he was a load. I mean, he was a guy that because he got up to speed and was a player that was breaking through the second and third level, he was breaking teams' backs. So I think that you definitely see Carlos Williams trending up. I don't know this is going to change how the Bills plan on using McCoy, but I do think that we haven't seen what he could do if he could stay healthy, and he's not the kind of running back that you would say, well, he's going to get healthy. He's going to be hurt every single year. So this could actually be a buy low moment for McCoy in a short-term window because he's going to still be with the team. Like you said, he's not getting cut. He may have a game 2-3 suspension at the most unless some really, really hairy details come out about this. Then you get into 2017, $6 million is, I think I'm looking at the numbers here, it's like $8 million dead cap if they cut him. Yeah, I mean, that'll be a proposition that'll be based on what he does in 2016. Maybe 2018 when he's 29 years old, which in mileage terms is going to be farther along than typical 29-year-old. Maybe that's when you worry about it. He fit well with the Rex Ryan team and ethos this year and surprised me. So I'd say that this is a more of a buy hold moment for him. And for Carlos Williams, I think you will see more of him, but I still think you're going to see McCoy. There were times that he really was the heart of the offense, and I don't think that was lost on Rex Ryan.
So knowing what we know now, do you think McCoy's 2014 was basically a byproduct of poor coaching on Kelly's part?
Right, well, and then we know that the two don't like each other. What I mean? And it was interesting, too, because there was Seth Wickersham that wrote the article about how McCoy was buying in and how this is how it's going to get to his best season. And now we look in hindsight, and that was like a wishful thinking, I guess. And we'll see Carlos Hyde owners are like sitting on the edge of their seat now, like, ugh. Because I was talking to someone I wish I could remember who it is, on Twitter today about this. They brought up some good points about how, the 49ers also have more of a drive blocking line than a zone line. You got to work with what you have, but Chip Kelly, work with what you have. It doesn't sound like Chip Kelly all too much, at least in that last stop. So I agree. I think we look back on 2014, and this is what we're always doing as we see more revealed, is it recontextualizes what we've already seen. And like I said, I thought McCoy was a player in decline, but I think you're right that you can chalk it up more to another place where Chip Kelly couldn't connect and get the most out of his players.
All right, so in our January ADP, looking back at again at Dynasty League Football's ADP, which I helped formulate, and this month Sigmund is helping us to come up with, thanks to participating in one of our drafts. But in January, there was about a 2-round difference between McCoy and Carlos Williams. I think it's fair to say that gap will narrow with this news, but I still expect McCoy to be the higher drafted player, and I still think he has more dynasty value than Williams at this point. Matt, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I want to chime in a little bit too, because I was the assistant recruiting coordinator at Pitt for 3 years and helped recruit McCoy. I mean, him and I didn't overlap there, and he actually committed to the U first before he ended up landing at Pitt. He's from the middle of Pennsylvania. I watched his high school tape. He was unbelievable. But he was, you know, he was poised to go to the U back when they were the U. I mean, that's the Sean Taylor, Winslow, Frank Gore years. I mean, they didn't just take anybody. But needless to say, I mean, he was good in high school. That doesn't really matter now. But there was maturity questions, too. I mean, that was something we knew about him back then as a 16, 17-year-old, and I'm sure they haven't changed. My hunch is, knowing Rex Ryan, I don't think he's going to hold this against him or he's going to be in Ryan's doghouse by any stretch of the imagination. But one thing that worries me is the right side of the Bills' offensive line was a real problem last year, but from center, left guard, left tackle, they were very good. Well, Incognito at left guard, Glenn at left tackle are both free agents. I mean, there's a chance that this line crumbles. I think they'll keep at least one of them, but there's a chance that his blocking is worse next year. That worries me a little bit as he ages. And I think Carlos Williams is very attractive. I mean, I want Williams on my dynasty team. I don't know that I want McCoy as much, because if you look at Williams, he came to Florida State as a safety. I mean, that's a big, mean-ass safety. But, you know, he's still learning the nuances of position. Right now, he's a run real fast and mash you, and I think he's going to really grow on Rex Ryan.
All right, so sounds like Sig is recommending maybe even buying McCoy or taking a chance on him, and the price is certainly down. So, you know, that's why we have you on here for that kind of perspective.
Yeah.
Let's move on, though, and your most recent article over at Football Guys is one that I know you spend a lot of time on, do a lot of work with, your Buy Low, Sell High series. It's just getting started for the pre-free agency time period. And you started with quarterbacks. I read that earlier and noticed a few interesting names in both categories. So looking at one of the guys you pegged as a buy low, Matthew Stafford of the Lions, of course. He's been kind of at the forefront of dynasty players' mind lately with the likely retirement of Calvin Johnson. I think he had a lot better season. He was better this year than people are giving him credit for, or maybe even better than people realize. He was the quarterback 9 in fantasy, and he's one of your buys. So tell us what you think about Stafford.
Yeah, I think you really foreshadowed well there when you said he's better than people think. And this is what I'm talking about with perception gaps between what actually happened or what the trend was going out of 2015 and what people believe happened. So what do we think when we think about the Lions? Failure, you know, frustration. And it was for the team. But once Jim Bob Cooter was installed, Stafford was much better, and he was much better statistically. He was much better on the field. I know that you could say, well, what if there's no Calvin Johnson, which I'm not convinced, just for the record, I'm not convinced that there's no Calvin Johnson in 2016. I think that's another – I think in the Roto World mock we just did, I took him like 9-10. Maybe in hindsight I might have waited until like the 10th or 11th round. I did it more to make a point to say, you know, once you get to that point of value, again, the Calvin Johnson owner is someone to just probe, just see where they're at. Mm-hmm. If they're willing to say, like, I'll cut bait, second rounder or something, like, I'll give a second rounder for Calvin Johnson right now, although it's a deep class of rookies. I'm opening up a can of worms here. The point is this, that Matthew Stafford, I believe, was a quarterback 6 in the second half of the year. he had a rough game in London in the first Jim Bob Cooter game. So if you say after Jim Bob Cooter took over, that's going to include that rough game against Kansas City. If you take that game out and he just comes from the bye forward, I think he was quarterback six. And even without Calvin Johnson, you're still going to have an offense that is oriented towards putting him in a comfort zone, because that's what we saw. I think we saw a similar thing happen with Cutler, and Adam Gase is obviously getting an opportunity to head coach based off of that. But the idea being that Cutler and Stafford, I've seen as sort of, you know, kindred souls as quarterbacks, where, and Matt Waldman has done a great job writing about this idea of some structure, yes, but not too much structure. And yes, that means you're going to have some plays where Cutler or Stafford do things where you say, what are you thinking? But it's what's natural for them. It's how you're going to get the best football out of them. I think Jim Bob Cooter figured that out. And it portends well. And he just turned 28, like this week. So I still think you're going to see Matthew Stafford maybe not return to 2011 form for fantasy. I mean, that may well be his career year. But the arrow is absolutely pointing up.
So my thinking with the Calvin news was, I don't think it really affects Stafford's value much. You know, before that, he was a second-round rookie pick value. I think a second-rounder would buy him in most leagues. And I don't think that's really changed. I think, you know, a third-rounder is not going to get the job done. His value certainly has not gone up. So, Bloom, are you buying for a second-rounder?
Probably no, because I'm just not buying quarterbacks, period. I mean, okay, if we're talking about traditional 12-team leagues, now we get 16-team leagues or two quarterback or super flex leagues where a quarterback has enough for a premium. Yes, I think that he's – well, look, there's the top four quarterbacks, okay, in the order you could quibble about, you know, Newton and Luck and Rodgers and Wilson. Those are the four. And I wonder whether it's worth investing – to get any one quarterback out of them, anybody, everybody else. I mean, just give me two out of the next 16 or 18 or three out of the next 25 if I have to, like, drop down. I'll make do with that in a dynasty league. So this is more about structure of rosters and lineups that would make me say I wouldn't buy Stafford. Like in our hyperactive leagues, you know, quarterbacks just don't have that much trade currency. Looking back, I'll give you an example of hyperactive five because I went into full rebuilding mode, Ryan. And I probably yes. – I don't think it was you that I made this trade with, but I know we were talking about some trades in that league. And in midway through the season, during one of those moments, Matt, when everybody was actually on the field or looked like they were going to be on the field, I traded Ben Roethlisberger for Tyler Lockett.
Nice.
Now, in hindsight, that you're not even going to get close to getting that done now. No way you're getting that done. Some of that is what Lockett did, and some of that is, you know, just, again, in the off season, quarterback trade currency is going to be nil.
Right.
In season, you may have a team that's pushing, they just lost somebody, or their streamers aren't really working out for them, and you can pull a trade in season with the quarterback. Outside of a season, good luck. Because, I mean, you know, I write that about buy low, sell high, like sell high with these quarterbacks. Like, good luck getting anyone to buy at all.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's certainly one of the most popular articles and series of articles that you've done over the years, but the meaning of it really has changed, especially with the, you know, the quarterback market. Matt and I were talking about Cam Newton as a potential sell high coming off this great season, and it's really the same thing. You know, what are you going to get for him? Like a late first? You know, you might as well hold on to him at that point. So another guy you had as a buy low was Teddy Bridgewater, coming off his second season with Minnesota. You know, this time, I'm just way into ADP. It's kind of live and breathe the ADP in the off season. This time last year, or actually I should say right before the season started last year, July, August, Bridgewater made it up to the quarterback five in Dynasty ADP.
Wow.
And he finished the season quarterback 23. So, you know, you don't always make those draft picks or you don't always make those trades expecting that immediate production in Dynasty, but I think it's fair to say Bridgewater was the disappointment for everyone. So what did you see that made you call him a buy low?
Well, this a couple of things I just said come right up here, right? One is for someone to fall from 5 to 23 in one season shows you that the spread between 5 and 23 at quarterback is not very big, because it's just take your pick. You know, do you want production right now, like a Breeze or a Brady or a Roethlisberger? Do you want somebody that you're putting in the bank that you could help you right now, like Mariota? So Mariota, so that's funny, like, is Winston quarterback 5 right now, Ryan?
Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. Now it's Winston. Right. Winston had a promising rookie year. Winston scored more on the ground than you expected him to. Winston has players around him that make it look like he's going to flourish. And that's not saying that Winston's not going to return that value, but the difference in value between quarterback 4, say it's Russell Wilson, and Winston, if you're doing some sort of point value chart where, say, Cam Newton is 100 and, say, you know, Russell Wilson's a 90, what's Winston, like 30? You know? I mean, a fraction of the value, less than half of the value of Russell Wilson. So that's where, like, we're watching these mocks go on. And, say, Russell Wilson goes in the 6th and Winston goes in the 8th or 9th, and it makes this like, oh, they're only 2 or 3 rounds apart. But there's a massive value drop there. And I think that – so Bridgewater getting as high as quarterback 5, I think, just showed the promise of what's to come. Now, what did we see this past year? Norv Turner, Adrian Peterson. There's like a good game is when he throws the ball 25 or 27 times for them. That's what they want. When he did throw over 30 times, he was a solid fantasy quarterback. Not a great fantasy quarterback, but a solid fantasy quarterback, including a game against Denver. He was one of the few quarterbacks to have some success against Denver. Mike Wallace caught a touchdown pass in that game. I think for a long time he was the only receiver that caught a touchdown pass against Denver during the season. That promise that everyone saw last year is still there. Now, may it take 2 or 3 years of Norv Turner and Adrian Peterson putting their fingerprints, like that's what this offense is about, maybe. But it harkens back to Russell Wilson earlier in his career, and it harkens back to Ben Roethlisberger earlier in his career, when these young quarterbacks are going to be kept in a box on the field and, you know, for lack of a better term, more of a game manager. And I think that's where Bridgewater is. So if you treat him as someone that you're just putting in the incubator to pull out 2 or 3 years and maybe be a mid-level quarterback 1, he can do that, I believe. And I think that people have overreacted a bit to how he was almost worthless for fantasy in 2015.
Yeah, it's a good example of dynasty owners probably swinging too far in each direction. Matt, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Bridgewater too. So Peterson, you know, I mean, how much time does he have left? Maybe 2 more years at this level. Mike Wallace is probably going to be cut, so he was essentially a non-factor for much of the season anyway. Stephon Diggs stepped up, had a really surprising to most of us, at least, rookie season. I don't know if he's cut out to be the wide receiver 1 on a contending team. What do you think of Bridgewater's future and the Vikings' future in general, Matt?
Yeah, you know, in terms of dynasty, this is probably as low as he's going to go. So, yes, he is a buy low. I don't like him as much as a player as I think you guys do, especially you, Sig, to be honest. I think he's Alex Smith. I mean, I think he's somebody that team is always going to have to massage and work around because, unlike Ben or Wilson, he's not as gifted of a passer. I mean, if it's December in Minnesota or Green Bay or Chicago, I don't like his ability to, you know, cut the wind. And I think, you know, in terms of football players, I think he's a better football player than his dynasty stock indicates now. But in terms of who do I want to lead my NFL team, I don't think he's close to Carr, Bortles, Winston, Mariota, you know, and I think he's too often lumped in that group. I mean, I think he's Alex Smith, and I think they know it. But the Vikings in general, if I'm in charge of the Vikings, and I think this is what they'll do, they're going to – remember the Cincinnati draft where they took Eifert in the first round, Gio Bernard early in the second round? Well, they were extremely Andy Dalton-friendly picks. You know, we're going to – in a way, Bridgewater's like Dalton. They're going to have to surround him – with high-level assets because their quarterback has a low ceiling. I mean, he's a limited player. And I think, you know, that's what Minnesota is going to do from here on out. And this offseason will show us that in spades, that I think they're going to do this offseason is all going to be about, where the last couple offseasons have all been about defense and Zimmer, and that makes sense, and they've hit on a lot of first-round picks. I think this offseason is all going to be about, let's build things to make Teddy's life easier in terms of protection and guys to throw the ball to.
I want to grab the wheel for a second, Ryan. Can I grab the wheel?
Yeah, go for it. Definitely.
While we're on the subject, Matt, I want to pick your brain. And Ryan, you chime in too. Cordarrelle Patterson, like one more year.
We talked about him last term.
sorry.
But not much. I mean,
no. Well, it's just interesting because I think he's one of those players that we know that North Turner's not going to meet him halfway. And it very well may be just a good sign that nobody's going to meet him halfway. But then again, strikes me as the kind of raw football talent that if he does land somewhere that will accommodate him, there will be the plays that you say, well, of course, if you give him the ball enough, these are the kinds of things that will happen. But I like shiny things. I like shiny objects, and Cordarrelle Patterson can be a shiny object. Am I just getting caught up in shiny object, Matt?
Well, I think Cordarrelle Patterson might get distracted by shiny objects too. I mean, true. I'm not sure his concentration to detail is plus. But, I mean, it's not like he had Martavis Bryant, Antonio Brown, Coates, and Wheaton ahead of him either. I mean, it blew me away that he couldn't see the field 20 snaps a game and, you know, run go routes.
Charles Johnson, too, the North Turner's best receiver we have.
Right.
By the end of the year, he's sitting on the bench with Cordarrelle Patterson. He's another interesting guy going in for Dynasty, going into the free agency. Anyway.
Right. I mean, but I thought Patterson could be a Harvin. I mean, hand him the ball 3 or 4 times a game. You know, you have to get him on the field. I understand he probably needs a lot of work. Clearly needs a lot of work. But it shocks me that he can't even get a sniff of the field.
Yeah, that's my concern as well. You know, Sig, you mentioned maybe he goes somewhere else, that best case scenario, wherever that might be, whatever coach, whatever team that might be. And I wouldn't say that Minnesota is the best case, but, you know, he's playing behind, like, Adam Thielen or who, you know, it's like,
right.
You know,
Darius Wright.
Yeah, it's just hard to see much upside. The good news with him and the good news with Bridgewater as well is if you're a believer, they're both basically free in Dynasty. So, you know, go grab them, take a shot and see what happens.
But couldn't they at least use them like Carolina used Ted Ginn this year? You know, run deep. Okay. And we're going to use you in jet action, and we're going to hand you the ball once in a while.
Yeah, yeah.
You just got the feeling North Turner like had some moment where he's like, I can't work with it. You know, I can't. How can you run an offense when you can't trust what the player's going to do on any given play or something like that? You know, so I'm done. I'm washing my hands of him.
Yeah.
Well, let's transition over to some of the players, some of those quarterbacks you would recommend selling. And I thought there were a couple interesting names. Blake Bortles had a breakout season. He was quarterback 4 in his second season. But at the same time, he led the league in interceptions. You know, his rookie season, I believe he was PFF's lowest rated quarterback this year. Second season, led the league in interceptions, just eclipsing Peyton Manning in the last couple weeks. So was he just propped up by Allen Robinson and Hearns and these other guys? You know, is he just destined to fall back to earth when it comes to fantasy scoring?
I think he was propped up by game script. And look, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Rashad Green, Julius Thomas, maybe Marquise Lee if he ever gets the engine to turn over. I mean, this is excellent. And also, it's a very valid reply to say, well, why are the game scripts going to get any better for Jacksonville? You know, what makes you think Jacksonville is not going to be a 4-12 team to eternity at this point? Sorry, Jags Twitter, I love you guys. I love the best fan base Twitter of any team is Jags Twitter. So that's my heart goes out to you when I say that. But you know, let's be honest. So I get that. But watching the Jags this year in the first halves of games, or when the game was still hanging in the balance, Bortles wasn't that great, really. I mean, there were moments that you'd see him make a play, you're like, that could, there you go, but it wasn't consistent, and this is just like basic football. And I know the numbers might break down, like 9 out of his 35 touchdown passes were when they were down by more than 2 scores, but look, the game flow in Jags games where the defenses for the most part were playing a little bit looser, and otherwise he wasn't facing the same kind of slate and intensity of defenses that other quarterbacks were because he was the quarterback for a bad team. And that, to me, just doesn't feel like something I want to count on, because it's not something that it's under the player's control. It's not something that's necessarily reproducible. It might happen again, but I would prefer to invest in players where the things that make their fantasy stats get to the level we expect aren't based on factors that are totally out of their control.
Well, he's the quarterback of a bad team, but he's also the quarterback in a bad division. You know, the Colts struggled this year. The Texans were up and down. You know, he had a lot of easy matchups despite that game script that led to passing a lot. I do think there's a chance that basically they're an improved team and that game script changes next year. You know, they lost their first pick, Fowler, last year, on the first day of minicamps, or I believe it was. You know, he barely stepped on the field. So I think it's a safe assumption that they used their first-round pick again on defense this year. So, you know, they're coming into 2016 with basically two first-rounders and a super young offense that has already shown what they can do. I think they could be in games, in many more games this season, which goes to your point that Bortles could see a dip in production.
They have gobs of cap room, too, and I'm sure they're going to spend a lot of it on the defensive side of the ball. I still think, though, Bortles, those four guys I named, Bortles, Carr, Winston, Mariota, I love them as players. If I'm the Jags, I'm excited. If I'm Tampa Bay, I'm excited. But they're sells to me right now for Dynasty because they're super inflated. You know, they're young, they're talented, I love them. But like Sig said earlier, selling the quarterback in the offseason, best of luck. You know, like I have Winston and Bortles in one league. I'm going to start to shop them, but I probably am not going to get value. I'm probably going to have those two as my starters next year.
I think the move with guys like that is to take that downgrade when it comes to age and get whatever extra you can get. So, you know,
maybe if you like Rivers in a second.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Rivers in a second, even Eli in a second.
Right. Stafford.
You know, if you can get Ben, you know, you probably won't get Ben in a second, but Ben and a, you know, backup tight end or something.
Since you brought up the Steelers, I'd rather have Ben than all those guys for Dynasty.
Yeah, I don't think.
I mean, he might throw five touchdowns. I mean, he's going to light it up next year.
I still think just, you know, off season, and when you look at Ben, he's, I don't know, what is he, 31 or something? So I think that alone affects his value over these next few months. So, Sigmund, the last quarterback I wanted to talk about from your article, I know it's called Buy Low, Sell High. I wonder if this is more of a sell low situation. Matt Ryan, the Falcons.
Yeah, right.
You know, really, really had a tough year. Julio Jones somehow still put up some record-breaking numbers, almost in spite of Ryan rather than because of him. So he was the quarterback 19 this season. Are you just ready to cash out no matter the return?
Yeah. Well, and I'll be interested to hear what Matt has to say about this. You know, I'm looking at the way that Matt Ryan was playing. And look, and again, you could say offensive line and Kyle Shanahan, we gave him all these accolades and thought he was some sort of magician, and, well, not so much this year. You could make excuses for Matt Ryan, and he may well in 2016 show everybody that, you know, it wasn't really him. But he was not good, y'all. I mean, he was not good. You watch Falcons, he was not playing good football out there. And I don't see what's going to change. I can't tell myself a story that, oh, the Falcons are going to be fine. So I think that we had him coming into the season in this group of quarterbacks that were going like quarterback 8 to quarterback 12 or so. And there's some trailing perception maybe, and Julio Jones doesn't hurt, but I think that, yeah, you for whatever you can get, a bump from the fourth to the third, you know. He's somebody that I would rather not be playing except in perfect matchups this coming year, and I can't say that I see anything on the horizon that's going to change it.
Yeah, I don't want him on my team. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm not excited. Boy, I got Matt Ryan on my team. Or, you know, boy, it's week 12, and I'm going to put him in my starting lineup. Ugh. You know, I mean, that's yucky. I don't like that at all. But I don't think you sell him now. You can't get anything for him. you know, if it was one of those type of deals, like I said, I have Bortles and I have Winston, and the only guy he can send me back is Ryan and a pick that I like, all right, you know, I mean, I'm not actively pursuing him. I don't hate him. I still think he can be a good football player. I think that system can be useful. I would think that they're going to add at least a tight end or a wide receiver or an interior offensive line help. I mean, his cast of character was pretty rough last year.
Let me ask you both this, because when it comes to the offseason and we're talking trades or I'm thinking about trades in my own leagues, one thing that I do is think about comparing that player, especially if I'm trading this player for a draft pick, compare that player to who I might get at that pick. So Jared Goff has been going in the early third round of rookie mock drafts. So for both of you, would you rather have Jared Goff in Cleveland or would you rather have Matt Ryan?
Well, I would rather have the pick. I just won't use it on Goff.
Right. Doesn't mean you have to take Goff, right.
No, but I would. But this is a good topic, Ryan. And one of the things I want to point out is one of the things, and Matt, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but you know, when we see a player go in the third round, that means that team probably had him as like a mid-second round grade at the lowest, maybe even a higher second round grade. Like sometimes teams are taking a fourth rounder they had graded as a second rounder. So when you're putting together your dynasty rookie draft board, if it's an early third, then you should really treat it like a mid-second. You're probably going to get around like 20th ranked player at pick 26, you know?
Team Bloom's 20th ranked player, for those who don't know.
Yeah. Like, you're going to get somebody that you would have taken 19th or 20th because not everyone's draft board is going to be the same. So I think that it needs err on the side of trading for picks. Picks are the current, and that we're going to, now as the, and Matt, I mean, Ryan, you could probably talk at length on this. I know you all collected some really great data on this. I'm sure as the draft approaches, and especially once the draft's underway, the picks become more and more expensive to acquire. And in fact, the right time to acquire picks was during the season, really. And they're just going to get more and more expensive. But you still are probably underestimating, and the person trading the pick away is underestimating what the true value of the pick is, because you're going to get somebody that you have rated higher than what that pick is. And depending on who you like I loved Thomas Rawls last year, okay? So where I could, I was acquiring an extra fourth rounder or last round pick, because he wasn't really on the radar, to make sure I could get him. So
create a roster spot, you know?
Yeah, to create that spot for him. So even those kinds of things, where like I had Thomas Rawls, I don't remember exactly where I had him rankings wise, but he was one of those players like I wanted to walk away from every single rookie draft with Thomas Rawls. And a fourth round pick to me, if I was getting that for Matt Ryan, like, geez, you're really cashing out. No. That's important. So you think about your plan, and I guarantee you that when everyone starts to look at the wide receivers, everyone's going to have their favorite wide receivers that are going in the third and fourth round of rookie drafts. So getting that extra pick, it might just seem like an extra throw-in, and you fast forward. Tyler Lockett was falling to the late second, early third. It can turn into players. Carlos Williams, where was Carlos Williams going? Fourth round and even sometimes maybe even undrafted.
Right.
So these picks that are like, well, that's all you can get from Matt Ryan, well, look just back 1 year and what those picks can turn into.
Bloom, I assume you agree with me, but it makes me crazy on Twitter. Like, I'll post a trade or I'll respond to somebody's trade, and I'll be like, take the picks.
Yeah.
And then somebody will inevitably write me back and be like, well, picks are just a lottery ticket. You know, I mean, hopefully you hit on a couple of them. I'm like, they're not a lottery ticket to me.
Right.
I'm going to make a good pick. I mean, I'm not just throwing something out in the air and hope I get somebody. I'm doing my homework, and I know my stuff. I mean, they're not lottery tickets. I'm not scratching off a ticket and hope I get lucky.
Okay, so now we're getting to that Harvard. I can't remember the name of the group that came up with that. Like, oh, the value, the pick, the Jimmy Johnson pick value chart's all wrong. Remember this, Matt?
Yeah, I do.
I called him out on Bleacher Report, too. I did a whole article that was like, if any GM uses this, they should be fired. And they wrote some response to me that was like, if anybody reads this Bleacher Report so-and-so, they're stupid. Because this is when Bleacher Report's name was still like, they were still like getting the reputation, like they were transitioning from the reputation. Anyway, they did this pick value chart that was like, and Chase Stewart and company doing excellent work in this area, like the expected value of, say, so the value of the number 7 pick is the average value of like whatever it was, the last 20 players when you look back on their career, right? And of course, like some number 7 picks are going to be busts. Some of them are going to be mediocre. Only a few of them are going to live up to that. So therefore, the value of that pick is like what you actually got from it. But Matt, the point you bring up, I think when we look at the NFL too, is a really important point. That no, it's the what you think you can make that pick turn into. And if you traded away picks, like, well, the number seven pick is only worth what the average player picked at number seven is worth. That's where I said the GM should be fired, because
right.
you can get so much more than that. But I think in fantasy football, we think of it more the other way, like you said. So you're right that it's like nails on a chalkboard when someone says it's just a lottery ticket. Like, you know, it's just throwing a darts at a dartboard and seeing where it lands. But it's something we can use to our advantage. And the other thing I'm going to say is this, and this is something I try to hit a lot on the couch. Fantasy football is entertainment. It's a release. It's therapy. It's a lot of things that are beneficial. And if studying the rookies, coming up with your strategy, like finding those players, like, I know if I can get a pick in the second half of the second round, I'm going to take this guy who's falling to the third in every draft, and executing it. And then maybe 1 year all your picks suck, you know, 1 year you just have some solid singles, but then you connect. Like Thomas Rawls last year. It feels
huge. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, why you do this, you know?
Exactly.
So play, you know, buy the ticket, take the ride, play.
And say, the 3.05, not even knowing who's going to be in the board, I promise is worth more in my hands or your hands or Ryan's hands than the dude in my one league that still has two kickers and two defenses on his roster.
All right, well, let's wrap up today and tonight, as we always do, with taking a quick look at a couple of dynasty trades. These were sent to us on Twitter, and again, I noticed a trend. Sammy Watkins' name is involved in a couple of these deals, and he's being dealt, or at least in consideration to be dealt, for a couple of highly ranked running backs. So there's two trades. They're both one-for-one trades. Sammy Watkins for Todd Gurley, Sammy Watkins for David Johnson. So I think we all kind of know Watkins' story. Obviously, he was a highly ranked guy coming out of Clemson. He was the 1.01 in many drafts, many rookie drafts. Got off to a slow start this season, had some injuries, had, you know, kind of some feeling out process in Buffalo. But the last 9 weeks of the season, he was the wide receiver 4. And he's jumped into this, back into this elite tier. In January, he was the 15th player overall in our ADP, and now February, it's still ongoing, but we have enough data for him. He is the 12th overall player, so he's a first-round dynasty startup pick. Are you trading him for Gurley? Are you trading him for David Johnson? Are you trading him for any running back?
Let our guests start this one off.
All right.
Oh, wow, there's so much here. Sammy Watkins. And what's interesting about Sammy Watkins is this is a polarizing player as much as we get polarized in our community. It's fun, though. I love this. It's one of the reasons I love this time of year is when it's all the very philosophical minds come forward. The people are trying to come up with the grand unified theory of football. And, you know, Sammy Watkins, from a metric standpoint, didn't measure up to a Mike Evans. And there was some talk in metrics, both in terms of like production and measurables. You know, the NFL Bills gave up two first rounders for me. And the NFL loved Sammy Watkins. Some parts of draft Twitter loved Sammy Watkins. I think that he was an unbelievably polished receiver for where he was at. As far as his development, and then there's maybe, and I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but, you know, he's a polarizing player. And what happened was his rookie year was looked at as a bit of a disappointment because of how stellar Odell Beckham was and just how this class showed out in the first year. And then in the second year, and this is a good example, Ryan, the way you presented that was perfect, because it's an example, again, of like perception versus reality. And I think that a lot more people are tuned into that wide receiver 4 over the last 9 weeks reality than you might have expected, because it's good, because it's an acknowledgement of his talent, which is just, you watched him in some of the games last year, like nobody was going to check him, like nobody was going to stay with him, and he was in an offense that was anemic in terms of pass attempts and sophistication of the passing game, and he was hurt a lot. And you still have him showing that he can, under those circumstances, rise to the top, and it's his second year. So what does that portend for the future? Now, I don't want to yada yada the injury part, because this was that was his first year too. That was the story. I, among others, apologists for Watkins saying you can't judge him on his rookie year. A, it was his rookie year and he was still an impact player, and B, he was hurt for a lot of the year. So we may look back and say, well, it was right there for us. Sammy Watkins is going to be a player that every year we say, for a stretch, you get Sammy Watkins that you think you're going to get, and then you have to go through the injury up and downs. So maybe this is a good time to sell him. I wouldn't sell him for David Johnson, though. And I'll admit to being wrong on David Johnson, and this is where I give something back to the metrics and say, the metrics love David Johnson. I saw a runner who wasn't really running behind his pads and seemed a bit contact-averse, and otherwise just he looked to me like an interesting like receiving specialist who you used in a lot of different ways, but not necessarily like maybe like Carlos Williams, who showed out very well too. I think you're putting the cart way ahead of the horse to trade somebody like Sammy Watkins to get David Johnson, even though the offense could accelerate his production. He was like fresh legs running against tired defenses. I'm not saying that it was an illusion. I'm just saying that I'm not cashing Sammy Watkins in for that. Todd Gurley is a different story, though, because the hurly-gurly, man. he wasn't supposed to be this good this early, and the Rams sucked. The Rams' offense was terrible, and look at what he did. It was exhilarating. It was like watching the sunrise, watching Todd Gurley this year, and thinking to yourself, we get to watch this guy's whole career. Just getting started. Man, I don't even know what's going to happen with him, but it's going to be fun to find out if he's on your roster. I can't tell you not to do Watkins for Gurley. And Le'Veon Bell is the other running back. We say any running back. I mean, like I play fantasy football so I can own guys like Le'Veon Bell. You know, if I can get Le'Veon Bell for Sammy Watkins, yeah, I'm going to do that. But I'm not going to say you have to. So Bell and Gurley is where I draw the line. Devontae Freeman, and I might have Freeman ahead of David Johnson, but I still don't love Devontae Freeman enough to give up a Watkins. But Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, like I play fantasy football so I can watch those guys. Like when they score, I score.
Matt, what about you? What do you think on Watkins versus those two running backs?
Yeah, I mostly agree with Sig. You know that in the running back world, I think there's Gurley, Bell, draw a line. Wait, David Johnson, Freeman,
Zeke Elliott, like Ezekiel Elliott. Maybe a year from now, we'll put him there. Maybe. Yeah.
I think Yeldon's in that conversation, too, for that next year. But anyways, so there's a big gap there. So to me, David Johnson for Watkins, no. Sorry, can't do it. And people are going to get, over the next 100 episodes of Dynasty Blueprint, our listeners are going to get really tired of me always siding with the young upside receiver because I'm going to do it over and over and over and over and over. And I'm smitten with Sammy. Those numbers you told me are a little bit shocking to me. And I'm sitting here looking at my receiver ranks, and I just moved them from 12 to 8. You know, I just moved them ahead of Mike Evans, A.J. Green. I didn't realize he was that good, but, man, he shows it on tape. I'm absolutely in love. But I think I still slightly lean towards Gurley. You know, I think he has special abilities. And Sig calls him the hurly-gurly man. I call him just the girly man. and I love him. And they have to dedicate their offseason to improving their offense, their line, their receivers, hopefully quarterback. I think it only gets better for him.
Yeah, with the move to Los Angeles, I just they would be crazy not to feature him, not to make him just the cornerstone of that team. Which, you know, with Jeff Fisher, maybe they are crazy. But thanks again to our first guest ever.
I can't let him go quite yet. I can't let him go quite yet. While we're talking trades, I made one.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
And we had talked about this on the last episode. This league, I had 1-2, I had 1-5, 1-7, 1-10, and two, one, and two, two, very early seconds. And I don't even have the roster space to get these guys in there. But I've been talking on this podcast since we started. I've been trying to package up like crazy to get Odell. Couldn't get it done. But I did get Amari Cooper, and I gave up 1-2, 1-5, 1-10, 2-17 third rounders for Amari and a 17 second. How'd I do?
Great. I made a very similar trade during the season, and I've tried to find it. I think it was Kelvin Benjamin, Nelson Agholor, and my 2016 first. And I think I ended up like going out in the semis in that league, so maybe I pick number 8. So it was
like
1-8.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like 1-8, Aguilar, and Benjamin. And, you know, because like Benjamin was supposed to play a big role for my team. And I think that I'm decently flush with receivers in that league, too. But Cooper is another player that you just start to do the math and know also that he was playing through a foot injury that we were underestimating and later on in the year. How good can he be? I don't know. I know it's going to be, and I feel, I underestimated how his polish, again, with polish, was going to translate right away. So I like that move, and I think that 1-2, 1-5, 1-10, I mean, 1-2 is going to get you Elliott or Treadwell, and that's
you have to give to get.
I mean, you have to give to get. But 1-5, 1-10?
I don't think they're much different.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, those aren't picks that are going to kill you. Like, when you see who goes at 1-5, you're like, oh, my God, how do you know? I gave up Treadwell and that. And so, and the rest of the, I mean, once you get to, like, seconds and thirds, and this is another great point on trading, by the way. If you have it where somebody comes to you and you kind of control the negotiations, you can get those extra picks at the margin. And you should never be against that if you have clarity and you know it's a trade you want to finish. I see people sometimes bail on trade, like, I can't throw in the second and third. Throw in the second. But it's Amari Cooper, so I say thumbs up.
Yeah, one of my big moves is I want to get a little bump in the next year. Yeah. You know, like, that was a big part of this to me, is those two thirds for the next year's second. Yeah, you know, I mean, that makes me happy.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it as well. We talked, you know, just a little bit last time about that 17 class, and it does look so, you know, so enticing. So the second round picks, even in 2017, are going to carry a lot of value. And I think a year from now, that's going to be an important bump for you. And we also talk about players, you know, the rub seems to be random first rounders. How many random first rounders are those stud players worth? And I think everybody seems to agree they're worth at least three. And would you go higher than that for Beckham? Would you go higher than that for Cooper or Julio or Todd Gurley, whoever it might be? So I think giving up three, they're not random. We know where they are now. Even though one is a top two pick, it's Elliott or Treadwell. I still think you won that trade. And like I said, I think that bump to the second round next year plays a big role in that.
And lastly, and I'm going to harp on this over the history of the Dynasty Blueprint too, is roster space is huge. You know, if I can, I had to cut guys in order to use those picks in a couple months from now, and now I can do the SIG move of now I got a spot that I can use that fourth round pick on Thomas Rawls.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's the roster flexibility, and you have to know your league, okay? So you have a fat waiver wire or a thin waiver wire. I think that, Ryan, the Piper Active Leagues have done a really good job of striking a balance here, that your $1,000 that you get every year to play with in blind bidding, you can land somebody that's an impact player. I mean, in hindsight, you look back at some of the players that are on the waiver wire, and what is it, Ryan, like 26, 12 by 26, I think?
Yep, that's correct.
So you have to know, but like if you're in a 16, I'm in some leagues like 16 by 45 with IDPs, it's a lot thinner. You know, maybe somebody that contributes is like the best thing you can hope for. So then your roster spots aren't as much at a premium. But having at least one or two during the season that you can just cycle through players, I mean, because something, and I think it was Five-ish or Jared, one of our great Audible faithful that came up. I think it was Jared Plotz, actually, who came up with this idea of Occam's waiver. And, you know, if you know philosophy, like Occam's razor, it's just like the most simplest explanation is probably most likely to be the correct explanation. Like if it takes longer to add in more elements to like your explanation of how something happened, then that makes it just inferior. And he gave this name to a practice that I have where sometimes, like, I'll have somebody like go on IR and I don't have the time, you know, 16, 17 teams I manage plus all the other stuff I do in season, sometimes I just don't have a chance to look over all the free agent lists and see everybody that's out there, because that's some of the fun of fantasy football too. Dynasty fantasy football is like, I have a roster spot to fill. I don't know if other people out there are like me, but like if I know, like I just complete a 3-for-2 trade.
Oh, it's so much fun.
It's just so much fun to be like, who are we gonna try out? You know,
yep, go watch some. In.
Yeah, it's great. Like, watch some plays from Game Rewind of their last few weeks. Like, get a feel. Like, search the news, see if there's any buzz about a player. And I think that when you have that opportunity, again, that's something that makes Dynasty Fantasy Football go, and freeing up those spots, having that ability to do that is part of what makes Dynasty, once you really get into it, like, the only way you want to play. Like, when I say I manage 16 or 17 teams, like, 12 of those are Dynasty teams. Two of them are in leagues that Ryan runs.
Nice.
Well, thanks again, Sigmund. It was great having you on, and I'm sure you all know Sigmund's work. If not, check it out at footballguys.com. Follow him at sigmundbloom.com, or at Sigmund Bloom, excuse me, on Twitter. And Sig, thanks a lot.
Yeah, anytime, and you know, I look forward to all the places the show is going to go, and certainly getting more people interested in Dynasty Fantasy Football, because I think that you're seeing people getting really excited about fantasy football, like, where can I go next? And once you find Dynasty, if it's for you, then you know right away.
All right. Well, we will see you next time. Thank you.